This is a special report from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Shortly before 9 o'clock this morning, a terrorist attack on the World Trade Center in New York City.
I was on my way to work across the Brooklyn Bridge, and I was about a third of the way across heading to Manhattan when I saw a plane. And they're never on this approach on the East River because I walk it every day. And it was coming in over the Manhattan Bridge towards Lower Manhattan. And it banked very slightly towards Brooklyn, which told me that there was something wrong. And I thought it was going to crash. And then all of a sudden it swung over as if it was going towards Newark Airport and hit the World Trade Center dead on.
Both towers of the World Trade Center have since collapsed. The Pentagon outside Washington, D.C. was another target. A plane crashed there as well. Stay right here for in-depth live coverage. First, though, this update of the latest news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Two planes crashed into both towers of the World Trade Center today. A large plane also crashed into the Pentagon, and a fourth plane crashed outside Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani says there has been a horrendous loss of life in the trade centers. NPR's Melissa Block is in downtown Manhattan.
The streets here are chock full of people. Virtually every major building is being evacuated. People are trying to get home with no way of doing so. The subways are shut down. The tunnels are shut down. You see people clustered around cars with their doors open and the radios blasting the news of what's going on. People clustered with their hands over their mouths in horror, lined up at payphones trying to call their relatives and loved ones to let them know they're okay. Phone circuits are crazy. It's almost impossible to get calls through. And huge, huge clouds of smoke billowing over the entire city, visible virtually everywhere you go.
NPR's Melissa Block in downtown New York City. President Bush was traveling in Florida when he learned the news today. He says the perpetrators of today's apparent terror attacks will be hunted down. He then departed but did not return to Washington, D.C. Instead, President Bush was flown to Barksdale Air Force Base in Louisiana. He is expected to speak shortly. The Pentagon was one of the buildings also attacked today. NPR's Steve Inskeep is there.
I'm standing some distance to the southwest of the Pentagon, looking at the wall that was struck earlier today. The only description of what happened that I have comes from an eyewitness who says he saw a white plane, strike the building. Shortly after that, according to several eyewitnesses, a four-engine propeller plane flew low over the Pentagon, which by that time had already been struck. The explosion had already taken place. What we're looking at now is this enormous gap in the building that has been opened by the explosion. Periodically, you see another piece of wall come tumbling down as fire crews continue working here. There are still flames shooting out of a few of the windows along the side of the building, and an enormous medical treatment center has been set up for the wounded outside. Medical helicopters have been coming and going, taking away some of the worst wounded, some of the burn victims, others apparently being treated here, and we have no information as to casualties.
NPR correspondent Steve Inskeep at the Pentagon in suburban Washington, D.C. The U.S. Federal Reserve says in the wake of today's series of apparent attacks on U.S. landmarks, it is open and operating. The Fed says that its discount window will provide liquidity to financial markets as needed. A spokesman for the Federal Reserve read the short statement and gave no further details. The U.S. financial markets have been closed and will remain closed for the rest of the day. This is NPR News. European leaders expressed revulsion at today's multiple apparent terror attacks in the United States. They rallied in support of the American people. NPR's Silvio Poggioli reports from Rome.
French President Jacques Chirac went on national TV and described the attacks as monstrous. British Prime Minister Tony Blair said the democracies of the world must come together to fight the mass terrorism that he said is the new evil in our world today. He then withdrew for crisis talks with his cabinet. In Berlin, the German government also convened an emergency meeting. Russian President Vladimir Putin, Czech President Václav Havel, and Italian Chief of State Carlo Zelio Ciampi all expressed shock and solidarity with the United States. Key indexes sank on world stock markets, and many European airlines canceled flights to the United States and recalled planes already in the air. In Brussels, NATO Secretary General Lord Robertson ordered the Atlantic Alliance buildings evacuated as a precaution. Throughout Europe, broadcasters interrupted regular programming and are showing nonstop live pictures from New York and Washington. Silvia Poggioli, NPR News, Rome.
Major League Baseball has postponed its entire schedule of 15 games today following the attacks. Baseball Commissioner Bud Selig has not made any decisions about tomorrow's games. Meanwhile, the nation's air traffic has been halted. All planes have been grounded and ordered to land at the nearest airport until further notice. We continue to follow today's main story. Apparent terror attacks have been reported on the World Trade Center in New York City. Both towers have collapsed. The U.S. Pentagon outside Washington, D.C. has also been hit by a plane. A hijacked plane also crashed outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the William T. Grant Foundation, helping the nation value youth as a resource through research and programs, and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
This is a special report from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're continuing with live coverage throughout the day and night of today's events that began with a plane that crashed into one of the towers of the World Trade Center in downtown New York. Another plane crashed into the other tower of the World Trade Center. Both have since collapsed. Numbers of casualties are not clear yet, but they are running very high. High-ranking city police officials estimate that people killed or injured in the Trade Center crash could be in the thousands. We know for sure at least 92 people were aboard American Airlines Flight 11, a Boeing 6767, en route from Boston to Los Angeles, which crashed into the building. Another 64 were aboard the second flight that crashed into the building, American Airlines Flight 77. That's a Boeing 757 that was en route from Dulles Airport near Washington, D.C. to Los Angeles. President Bush was in Florida doing an education event when the news broke this morning. He described the incident already, the two crashes into the World Trade Center, as an apparent terrorist attack. This will not stand, he said. Subsequently, a third aircraft crashed into the Pentagon across the river from Washington, D.C. A fourth plane has crashed near Pittsburgh after it was hijacked. This appears to be a coordinated series of attacks on the United States. President Bush has been flown to Barksdale Air Force Base in Louisiana, where he said the nation's military has been placed on high alert status. Quote, "We will do what it takes, whatever's necessary to secure America and Americans." NPR's Peter Kenyon joins us now, as he has throughout the day. Can you give us any more information? What's new?
Well, the latest actually has to do with the planes, and it's kind of a pullback on some of the information. You went into quite a bit of detail there on each plane. At the moment, American Airlines is now pulling back from its statement about which plane crashed where. They are maintaining the numbers and the flight numbers and the number of people on board these flights, but they're no longer saying which two particular planes crashed into World Trade Center, and there has never been a confirmation of which plane hit the Pentagon. And then, of course, there's a fourth plane crashing north of Pittsburgh. But we do know that there was 156 people aboard the two American Airlines planes, and there were 110 people aboard the two United Airlines planes. And we know the two planes hit World Trade Center, one hit Pentagon and one hit at north of Pittsburgh Airport there. President Bush, down in Barksdale, Louisiana, said, make no mistake, the United States will hunt down and punish those responsible for those cowardly acts. Of course, there is no confirmed credible report yet of who is responsible. And he was in Sarasota, and he then moved quickly to Barksdale Air Force Base.
And we're now getting audio of President Bush. Let's listen to that. Apparently, we just lost the feed, and there are all kinds of communications problems throughout. We know the East Coast and presumably the rest of America today, because so much of the communications is run through New York City.
Not just in the U.S., all around Europe as well. The telecom system in France is now straining and creaking under the load of calls to the U.S. So, and London, the same problem. And it's a European reaction as well as American. And everybody is trying to find out at the same time what has happened, where's the damage, how many people were hurt, and who might have been responsible for this.
And that is a question all of these questions are going to become clearer. But as we look for answers today, I think at this point, all we can tell people to do is just to wait, which is so difficult.
This is the stage in any kind of disaster area where there is the greatest potential for overreaction and inaccurate statements made in the heat of the moment. One senator, in fact, Chuck Hagel of Nebraska, just said, quote, "This is the second Pearl Harbor." Now, some people, you may or may not agree with that. I think what he was referring to was the fact that this seemed so totally unexpected, that the U.S. intelligence community gave no warning. There was no sign, anyway, of any preparation for a terrorist attack. So certainly the surprise factor is there. But as you say, this is the time when overreaction could happen, especially when you try and speculate on who could have been responsible for this. The Hamas group out in Palestine has already denied it. They say they had nothing to do with it. You can take that if you believe it or not, but certainly these groups have taken responsibility in the past when they have committed terrorist acts.
The Taliban government, which runs almost all of Afghanistan, has issued a statement that Osama bin Laden, a suspect who leaps to many minds, was not involved, they said, and could not have done it, and they denounced the attack.
They did. The main point of their statement was to condemn this terrorist attack. They say they had no part in it, and they don't believe Osama bin Laden did. The Taliban, of course, have given shelter to Osama bin Laden. He's the Saudi militant who has masterminded previous attacks, including the American embassy bombings in Africa in 1998. They say they don't believe he was involved in this, but we will just have to wait and see.
Peter, thanks very much.
Thanks, Neil.
Joining us now is NPR's Melissa Block, who is in New York. Melissa? Melissa?
Yeah, hi, Neil. I can barely hear you. I'm standing just north of where the World Trade Center towers used to be. There are thousands and thousands of emergency personnel who are massed here waiting for it to be safe for them to go in and try to see what's left of the Trade Center themselves. But for right now, all you can see is a huge plume of smoke billowing from where the towers used to be, huge, thick, dark clouds spreading over southern Manhattan and up into the city. There are a number of emergency personnel I've talked to who have been coated with debris, just ash and mud, who were right there when the first plane hit. They responded to the scene. A number of police and fire officers went inside and were in those towers when the second plane hit and ultimately when the towers collapsed. So that the emergency personnel I've talked with fully expect that there must be a whole great deal of emergency personnel who were killed in the explosions themselves because they responded to the scene. There are also, I must say, a number of onlookers, curious onlookers, who've been drawn out today to watch the spectacle. It is something the city has never seen. Anywhere you walked in Manhattan today, you saw people heading north from downtown. Many of them had gone to schools to pick up their children. They were walking with face masks to cover their mouths from the smoke in the air. Some of them looked quite upset. They'd gone to pick up their children and were trying to get them home.
Melissa, the scene that most Americans will bring...
I'm sorry, Neil, I can't hear you.
Most Americans today are going to be thinking about Oklahoma City. Can you see any rescue operations like we saw in Oklahoma City underway?
I'm sorry, Neil, I couldn't hear that.
We're asking whether you can see any rescue operations underway. Obviously, Melissa Block is having difficulty hearing us, and we will bring her back if we can get a better line. And we're at the mercy of technology, and the same kinds of communications problems that are bedeviling everybody else in the world are even worse, obviously, today, especially in New York City. NPR's Melissa Block will get back to her as soon as we can reestablish communications. Let us now get in touch with Craig Childs. This is a man who was on Fifth Avenue this morning and witnessed the crowd reaction to the planes crashing into the World Trade Center towers. Thank you so much for joining us.
Certainly.
Can you describe what you saw?
Well, I can give a visual and emotional sense of what it was like there, because I arrived just moments after the plane struck the towers from about a mile or so away. Came around the corner and could see flames just crawling up the sides of the buildings and a robe of gray smoke heading off to the southeast. And people standing around at that moment were just voiceless. People were coming out of the subway onto the street and just standing there transfixed, staring at this thing. People every once in a while would point and shout and say that there are people jumping out of the towers, but of course from where we were you really couldn't tell. A person that high up is indistinguishable from a falling desk or a file cabinet, and that's when people started looking around at the buildings above us, and I heard a sigh rise up, just thousands of people gasping at once, and I looked up and saw that the South Tower was collapsing. And I don't even know if the word collapse is correct here. It just disappeared. The lines that define the building dissolved, and the building just vanished.
It must be difficult for a New Yorker to even conceive of that happening.
Well, I imagine it would be. I'm coming from rural Colorado. I'm only here for a few days, and so this is a pretty striking event for me to watch New Yorkers respond to this, and to watch myself respond to it. Walking around, hearing people, one man came up to me and he was just shouting. He said that we should be bombing people right now. That he wants to kill somebody, and I didn't know how to respond to him. This is a very fragile time. We could go any number of directions here. You could feel the fragility on the street. Just people not sure whether to head for anger or head for tears.
And maybe as an outsider, you might have been able to appreciate that, have a little bit of perspective on it, but nevertheless, a participant as well as you watched it.
Yeah. Well, I, not knowing the city very well, but starting to learn how people move here, you can see right now that pedestrians are owning the streets. That it's a very different sense of movement. People are making eye contact now. People are looking for some kind of emotional outlet. They're looking for something, somebody to talk to.
As we look, and it will be days before we have a clearer idea, perhaps, of what the meaning of this is and who was responsible and how all of this went about. But Craig, as you look for some meaning today, right now, do you find any?
It's difficult to find meaning in something like this, especially so swiftly. What really struck me is that when the South Tower came down, just so many hands went up in the air, and it looked as if people were trying to stop it. They were trying to reach up and grab the building. Just thousands of hands just shooting up into the air all around me. People were just horrified, and I guess what I'm seeing now is that the city has been turned from a machine into something organic. It's just filled with emotion, not necessarily the panic that you might imagine, just sheer emotion everywhere.
And like so many other phone calls we've had today, yours is being drowned out by the sound of emergency vehicles.
Yes. Yeah.
Craig Childs, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Certainly.
Craig Childs is a commentator on NPR's Morning Edition, comes to us normally via station KVNS in Colorado. He was on Fifth Avenue this morning as he watched the collapse of the towers of the World Trade Center. Still with us is Richard Schultz, the Director of International Security Studies at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University in Medford, Massachusetts. Thanks very much for staying with us.
Sure.
And one of the questions that we need to go to and revisit from time to time as events become clearer is, again, there cannot be too many organizations around the world that would be capable of this kind of coordination and this kind of financial and logistical effort.
No, I would agree. And also, we have to think about a possibility of states assisting those groups. I've been thinking a lot about this Pearl Harbor analogy as I've been listening,
mm-hmm.
and it seems very relevant to me. First of all, absolute surprise. Didn't see it coming. It hit at major symbols of American power. And in the case of the World Trade Center, it's so interesting because it's the second time it was hit. It's almost as if you missed it the first time, but you came back and got it the second time. Casualties, unfortunately, are probably going to be comparable.
Let me remind people there were about 2,000 dead at Pearl Harbor.
Right. And I think you're going to hear frequently in the coming days and weeks that, as in Pearl Harbor, this is war. And that's a very hard term. We don't like to think that. But it looks like it.
And we're already hearing some of the anger that did follow Pearl Harbor.
And you'll feel that too, because unlike Pearl Harbor, with modern communication, we are going to almost constantly learn about the individual tragedies, and that's going to be heart-wrenching. I also think that there's going to be some real hard looks and finger-pointing in terms of how come we didn't know about this, and why and what has our policy been to prevent these kinds of actions, not simply to manage them once they happen.
An admiral and a general, people responsible for security in Hawaii on December 7th, 1941, were both court-martialed, and, their stories is part of history now, and that may happen as well. We'll be back with you, Richard Schultz. Please stay with us. Richard Schultz, the Director of International Security Studies at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University in Medford, Massachusetts, kind enough to bear with us as we continue NPR's live coverage of the events that began with the attack at the World Trade Center Twin Towers in New York City earlier today. I'm Neil Conan, and you're listening to a special report from NPR News. This is a special report from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, where we continue to monitor developments following the series of terrorist attacks on the United States earlier today. A few moments ago, as we mentioned, President Bush was speaking. We believe this is at Barksdale Air Force Base in Louisiana. He was in Florida when the events happened this morning and then was taken to Barksdale Air Force Base. Here now is the president's remarks.
Freedom itself was attacked this morning by a faceless coward. And freedom will be defended. I want to reassure the American people that the full resources of the federal government are working to assist local authorities to save lives and to help the victims of these attacks. Make no mistake, the United States will hunt down and punish those responsible for these cowardly acts. I've been in regular contact with the Vice President, Secretary of Defense, the National Security Team, and my cabinet. We have taken all appropriate security precautions to protect the American people. Our military at home and around the world is on high alert status, and we have taken the necessary security precautions to continue the functions of your government. We have been in touch with the leaders of Congress and with world leaders to assure them that we will do whatever is necessary to protect America and Americans. I ask the American people to join me in saying a thanks for all the folks who have been fighting hard to rescue our fellow citizens, and to join me in saying a prayer for the victims and their families. The resolve of our great nation is being tested, but make no mistake, we will show the world that we will pass this test.
President Bush speaking a few moments ago at Barksdale Air Force Base in Louisiana. NPR's national security correspondent Tom Gelton joins us now. He's on a phone near the Pentagon. Tom, what can you tell us about what's going on there?
Well, Neil, actually, I'm at a gas station, combination gas station Navy exchange store that's just to the west of the Pentagon, directly opposite where the aircraft crashed into the plane. So from here, we have a very good sight of the continuing rescue efforts, constant helicopter traffic in and out. The flames are still coming from the building. It's just been a dramatic attack, Neil. You know very well how sturdy the Pentagon is. I mean, this building was built 50 years ago to withstand air assault, and this aircraft just sliced right through from top to bottom, leaving a big gap in the Pentagon. And this area where I am now is sort of been is kind of the headquarters for the rescue and relief operations, such as it is. We still have no information whatsoever on the casualties. They clearly were significant. The only, quote, good news, unquote, out of this story is that the one part of the Pentagon that was hit was recently renovated, and a lot of the offices there had still not been occupied. So the casualties were, I would imagine, lower than they could have been.
And no estimate on the number of casualties yet?
None yet. And the Pentagon, some of the Pentagon information officers actually are operating out of this little gas station. But communications has just been so disrupted by this. We do know a couple of things. We know that Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, is still in the Pentagon. He is at the National Military Command Center, which is the Pentagon equivalent of the famous Situation Room in the White House. This is where all military communications and planning globally is done. It's staffed 24 hours a day. I spoke to an officer who had been on the phone with people at the command center about an hour ago. He said that it was filling up with smoke, but it wasn't so bad that they were going to abandon it yet. So that's where Secretary Rumsfeld is at this point. That's where, you know, a number of high-level intelligence people are as well. You know, Neil, that the Pentagon has, like all the other security agencies, thought about terrorism for a long time and practiced contingency plans. I asked Rear Admiral Craig Quigley, who's the Deputy Pentagon spokesman, if they were prepared for something like this, and this is what he said, Neil. We have a variety of security plans to face a variety of conditions, but what you've seen here is a full assault on the United States of America.
Tom Gelton, thanks very much. We'll be back in touch with you later today. We really appreciate it. NPR's national security correspondent, Tom Gelton, joining us now is Senator John Warner of Virginia. Senator, thank you for joining us.
Yes, indeed.
Senator, I have to ask, do you know anything that we don't right now?
There's a group of the members of the Senate and the House here on the Capitol grounds where we've been since there was an orderly evacuation of our buildings earlier today. We have some information, but I think basically the media are doing the best it can to share with the nation at this time what is known. Right now, we in Congress, those in public office, are trying to give our support to the president and his team of advisors and those particularly in the security system and our military to do what they can first to care for our wounded and their bereaving families and to ensure that from whence this attack came, a further attack cannot be inflicted now or tonight or tomorrow or the next day. But really, we should, those of us in public office, do everything we can to reassure the American people. Our government is intact. This nation is strong in its leadership in the world. And we will survive this frightful attack on our innocent people and continue to lead and do whatever we can to strengthen peace and freedom in this world. We've got to.
Senator Warner, as a former Secretary of the Navy and members at various times of both the Armed Services Committee and the Intelligence Committee.
Yes, I spent 23 years on the Hill. Once was here a year ago, chairman of the Armed Services Committee.
But you know that one of the questions that's going to be asked is, why didn't we know about this?
Well, clearly that question is being asked, will be asked, and we've got to have forthcoming for our people. First, the reassurance that we've got every single asset of our nation in place to see that it cannot be a repetition of this attack. But for the moment, we've got to address this situation. Our nation is functioning. We're going forward. We're caring for those who've been injured, and we're doing everything we can to see there's not a repeat attack somewhere.
One of your colleagues, I think it was Chuck Hagel of Nebraska, described this as Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, I was standing with him, and I was reminiscing because I was a young sailor at the end of World War II. And I commented that, yes, it has the proportions of a Pearl Harbor. And I remember my generation of that era showed the courage and the guts to lead this nation. And I said this morning in a short prayer meeting in my office, before I told my people to leave the office and go home, I said, it is your generation, young people, and you have the same guts, the same courage, and the conviction to lead this nation as my generation of World War II did.
Senator, obviously one difference with Pearl Harbor is that the return address, if you will, was not in
clearly
doubt.
That shows you...
This may be a little murkier, yes.
No, you're quite correct. For the years that I've been on the Armed Services Committee, when I was chairman, I created a special subcommittee to deal with emerging threats, because the chances are that this frightful attack on the United States is not state-sponsored. It's likely to be some group of terrorists. We know not where from at this moment, but you're correct. We knew who the enemy was then, we knew what their capabilities were, and we knew what America had to marshal to bring about freedom in the world. We did that. We're going to do that again. Have confidence. We are going to survive this and continue to be a strong nation to lead the world. Thank you very much.
Senator John Warner of Virginia, we really appreciate your taking your time to speak with us.
And Neil, this is David Wallner. We have Congressman Jim Moran of Virginia, a Democrat, who is standing by to have a word with you also.
Congressman Moran?
Yes.
Thank you for agreeing to speak with us and
sure,
all using the same cell phone there.
Yeah.
I know
go
that
ahead.
Your response has to be heartfelt, particularly because some of this, I believe, if it's not in your congressional district,
yeah,
the Pentagon,
it's
very close.
I represent the Pentagon, and there are thousands of constituents who are employees of the Pentagon who I'm afraid have suffered wounds, and I suspect there are a number of deaths. I'm trying to determine that information, and I haven't been able to as yet get any confirmation of the extent of the destruction.
Normally, your sources of information are, I would have to confess, better than ours on such a story. Is there anything that you know that you can tell us?
No, they've cleared the military hospitals of all non-essential services to make room for ministering to the people who have been seriously injured. Apparently, there's a great many of them. I can't confirm. We won't know really till the end of the day. I would rather them dealing with the injured than dealing with the press right now. We know there was a plane that hit the Pentagon, substantial damage. There was a car bomb at the main headquarters of the State Department. There was another individual who was blown up on 15th Street, which is right in the downtown D.C. And then, of course, we know about the that has crashed outside Camp David, and obviously the unbelievable destruction of the Twin Towers.
And another aspect of your area, I don't believe Dulles Airport is in your district, but...
Well, actually, it is now, redistricting. But all the planes have been accounted for now. They've all been grounded, so we have no errant planes up there. We do have security cover of... our jet fighters are up guarding the sky above the Washington, D.C. area. The only thing, other thing I can tell you that you might not know is that I'm on the Defense Appropriations Committee, and at 10 a.m. when this happened, we were trying to make the case that we ought to move about $800 million out of the National Missile Defense Program into specific terrorist security measures, that we felt that we may be more vulnerable to terrorist cells using unconventional means of destruction than the more traditional weapon of a nuclear missile being fired from a another country. It's not other countries that we need to deal with that have, if not democratic, at least relatively stable governments. These we're dealing with extremist terrorist cells that are far more dangerous and lethal, and that's been proven. This is the most destructive terrorist act that has occurred in American history. Others have been attempted. We thwarted them. This was coordinated. It was extraordinarily effective. I don't think we will look at terrorism again, ever again, in the same way after today.
Congressman James Moran of Northern Virginia, Democrat, thanks very much for speaking with us.
Bye.
Appreciate it. So we just spoke with Senator John Warner of Virginia and Congressman Jim Varan, also of Virginia. We'll go now to Jennifer Ludden, NPR's correspondent in Jerusalem. Jennifer, are you there?
I'm here. Hi, Neil.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Israel, how is it responding in this crisis?
Well, given speculation, and I guess it's no more than that, that this may have some relation to the Middle East, a group angry at U.S. policy toward Israel. Israel has reacted. It has downsized much of its diplomatic staff in the United States. It's also announced that its airspace will be closed to foreign carriers for the next 24 hours. Interesting reaction as well among Palestinians here. I would point out first that Yasser Arafat, the Palestinian leader, has condemned the attack and expressed his condolences. Two radical groups, Hamas and the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine, have also denied the reports that they had anything to do with this attack. But on the streets here, there is actually an air of celebration. Earlier today in East Jerusalem, shopkeepers were distributing sweets to kids passing by. Several thousand Palestinians were rallying in northern West Bank towns like Nablus, Qalqilia. Palestinians believe that these terrorist attacks were carried out in their name and that somehow this will persuade the United States that to change what they perceive as a very biased foreign policy. Palestinians told me Israel, the United States has unconditional support for Israel. It vetoes any attempt to criticize Israel in the United Nations Security Council. Maybe now they'll start thinking about our Palestinian suffering because they feel these attacks will point out to the U.S. that Palestinians are being treated unfairly.
Are these reminiscent of the celebrations on the West Bank when the Scud missiles were fired by Iraq toward Israel during the Gulf War?
Probably very much so. I was not here then, but I imagine it is very much like that. When sort of confronted with, you know, gee, don't you think this might in fact make American officials quite angry and backfire and not make them change policy, one man said to me, well, but if they don't change the policy for sure, they will change the president. Several people said this is the policy of President Bush backfiring. Bush has unconditionally supported Israel's Prime Minister Ariel Sharon. He's not taken an aggressive stance on support of Palestinians. This is what he wanted. This is what he gets, said one man.
Can you give us any idea of, obviously, tremendous security measures in place there, but there are tremendous security measures in place all the time. Is there a noticeable difference today?
It's hard to tell. I've only been around Jerusalem. I haven't been to the airport. It did feel sort of eerie on the streets, but maybe that was just in my imagination. I'm sure that many calculations are being made among foreign ministry officials. I have no doubt that they're concerned that perhaps some of their installations in the United States or even elsewhere could be targeted as well, given that the U.S. and Israel are such close allies. So I'm sure there's many more measures being taken.
What I was trying to get at, and you may not be able to answer this question right now, but is there a sense that given what has happened in New York and Washington, and I guess we have to include the plane crash in Pennsylvania as well, given what has happened in this country today, is there a feeling like this is a new day, that something has changed and that the world will not quite ever be the same again?
I don't know that that has sunk in here, at least not among Palestinians. I mean, there was really not much awareness, I think, of the extent of the damage. While many people were tuned to their televisions and watching the incredible pictures, when I mentioned to one man, for example, the fact that 50,000 people worked in the World Trade Center, he was blown away, had no idea. I'm really not sure that the larger consequences are sinking in, at least among Palestinians yet.
Jennifer Ludden, please keep us up to date.
Thank you.
NPR's Jennifer Ludden speaking with us from Jerusalem. Again, we will be here throughout the course of the afternoon. Then, starting at 4 o'clock Eastern Time, All Things Considered's crew will continue to provide special coverage as we follow the day's events and then through the night as well as dramatic events have unfolded, beginning with attacks on the World Trade Center in New York City, aircraft flying into each of the two towers of the World Trade Center, which subsequently collapsed in an enormous plume of dust and smoke. You're listening to a special report from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan.
Support for National Public Radio comes from this and other National Public Radio stations. Contributors also include the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Kellogg Foundation, helping people help themselves by investing in individuals, their families, and their communities, on the web at www.wkkf.org. The Pew Charitable Trusts, investing in ideas, returning results, www.pewtrusts.com. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
NPR News will provide special coverage throughout the day and night to keep you informed on today's events, events President Bush has described as an apparent terrorist attack. We'll continue here in Studio 3A until 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Then Noah Adams, Linda Wertheimer, and Robert Siegel will continue news coverage of today's events. NPR News will provide special news coverage throughout the day and the night. This is NPR News. This is a special report from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Now, as we continue our live coverage of the events following the terrorist attacks in New York City and Washington today, let's go to reporter Tom Jennings, who is in downtown Manhattan. Tom, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
And I understand you're at a triage site?
I'm at one of the primary triage sites. There are two or three frontline triage sites in downtown Manhattan, near the towers, what's left of them. And they're in the process of just gearing up. They're really preparing for an onslaught.
Triage, we should explain, is an old medical idea. As you take a stream of casualties, you divide them into three groups, thus the phrase triage.
That's right. They've been talking to all the paramedics here. There are several hundred around with their ambulances and dozens of volunteers, telling them the walked wounded are to be essentially ignored, and the ones who are in the process of dying are also to be ignored. Only the ones that are possible to save are to be treated.
And can you describe the scene that you're looking at now?
It's a strange scene of relative calm here right now. There's this kind of sense of tension and some humor, actually, very nervous laughter about what's going to happen. I don't know how to explain it. It's almost as if we're waiting for a tidal wave as we're standing on the beach.
is there any idea, and I'm not even sure you would have a clue to this, but any idea as to the number of casualties other than that we expect this flow to be horrific?
No, they don't have a number. It's thousands, obviously. They are not allowing any of the EMT units anywhere near. That's why they have these triage units set up. There are buildings that are about ready to collapse, and they're not going to do what they call urban rescue until those buildings are secure.
So these are the buildings around the World Trade Center?
Oh, yeah. There's apparently one other building that's about ready to go. I don't want to speculate what it is. It's one of the one of the buildings nearby.
It's in the same complex?
I don't know.
Okay.
I can't tell you.
Okay.
It's really hampering rescue efforts. The people down here have apparently, a lot of the firefighters, a lot of the police officers have themselves been lost because they were down there after the first explosions and then right before the collapses of the buildings. So the people that they're going to be treating here are not just the people, the civilians, if you will, but the people who were there to rescue the civilians as well.
I should explain that in addition to the two famous towers of the World Trade Center, there were a couple of other smaller buildings that are part of the same complex, and not far away, of course, it being downtown Manhattan, many other buildings, including Stuyvesant High School. So, reporter Tom Jennings, thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay. Let us go now a little bit further uptown in New York to Jim Zaroli, who was at NPR's Bureau in New York. Jim?
Yes. It's very, very sad, very tragic day in New York today. This is a city that sort of usually takes things in stride, I think. But this has really been a major blow. It's completely unexpected. I can tell you we're in a state of emergency, what the city calls a full terrorism alert. The government has activated the National Guard. The bridges, some of them were closed earlier today. I'm hearing that some of them are reopened. The tunnels, all closed. Airports, schools, office buildings have been evacuated. The UN, the New York Stock Exchange, all the financial markets are closed. We had a primary election today in which we were going to nominate candidates for mayor. That was canceled. Mayor Giuliani has basically told everyone not to go below Canal Street.
Which is about two-thirds the way down Manhattan Island as you look north to south.
Yeah, it's a very large area. It includes Tribeca, the Wall Street area, Battery Park, Chinatown. This is a lot of residential areas and in addition to the office buildings that are there. He has said that if people are there and can leave, they should, and a lot of people have. He said people should not go into the area, basically because he needs to, for their own safety, but also because the city needs to keep the streets clean for all the emergency vehicles that have to go in there.
Again, the question that's going to come up 1,000 times, and even when it is answered, it will be changed another 1,000 times after that. But is there any casualty estimate that you're aware of?
Not that I'm aware of. You know, it seems as though this is such a big area and so many people in it, and so many people were sent to so many different hospitals, at least 50. I've heard as many as 100 in the whole New York City area.
Across the river to New Jersey as well.
Yeah, all over. I mean, the vast area. The mayor has asked any medical personnel out there to come to the area, to volunteer their time, to help the hospitals. The hospitals are asking for blood. It's an all-out effort on the part of the healthcare system.
Is there any central area where people looking for relatives who they fear may have been in the World Trade Center today, where those people can get information?
Not that I know of. I mean, there have been some individual. I know Morgan Stanley, for instance, has had offices in the World Trade Center. Don't know anything there, but they had a number that people could call if they wanted to find out about their relatives. I'm sorry, I don't have the number with me.
Thanks, Jim, very much. Jim Zaroli at NPR's Bureau in New York. We'll be back in touch with him throughout the day as we continue to bring you the news, what news we have when we have it. Joining us now is Jim Burnett, the former National Transportation Safety Board chairman. That's the NTSB initials you will be hearing a great many times over the next few days. He served three terms from 1982 to 1988, currently practicing law in Clinton, Arkansas. Sir, welcome.
I can't say that it's good to be with you under the circumstances, but we appreciate your coverage.
And what can you tell us? Obviously, I assume you have no particular information about the events today.
Other than what I've been hearing on the press reports, no, I do not. I have a reaction to it when you've worked so hard for 20 years as I have to try to prevent a nightmare scenario, and there are certain nightmare scenarios in aviation safety from happening. And then you have this one that's accomplished with evil intent. It's sickening and it's infuriating.
What is it that your colleagues, those still on the NTSB, are doing now?
Well, I don't expect that the NTSB has on its own launched any investigation, except unless it may be into the plane that's crashed in Pittsburgh. I don't know that.
Outside of Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Outside of Pittsburgh, that's right. They may be being called in by investigators to assist the FBI or the other criminal investigative authorities with some of the NTSB's expertise.
And can you give us any indication, throughout the wreckage, I mean, clearly these aircraft that crashed into the World Trade Center, then the building subsequently collapsed, the Pentagon is still aflame, at least in parts. Will there be fingerprints that people can find on those airplanes?
Well, yes, I would anticipate.
I speak of fingerprints metaphorically.
Yeah, well, in fact, they may be there literally. In fact, if their weapons were in use, I suspect that eventually that those instrumentalities that were used in this crime will be recovered and will be used to prosecute people. Although I think there may be a larger issues than criminal prosecutions in these cases.
Would the black boxes, the flight recorders, would they have survived, do you think?
Oh, I would expect that they would, yes.
And that would include recordings of what, the last half hour of conversation in the cockpit?
Yeah, that's correct, unless they were disabled.
And is that possible to do without extensive knowledge?
Well, I think one of the things that the thing that I find shocking, perhaps it's not surprising, but shocking, is the fact that this could not have been accomplished without quite a level of knowledge, both of the an analysis of the holes in the aviation security system, as well as the ability to some degree to control the planes. I don't think professional pilots who were responsible for these planes, even under duress, would have flown them into buildings. Someone who had to have some skill in piloting the planes. We're not used to having people with suicidal tendencies and willing to do kill themselves and a whole plane load of people with that level of skill. And so it's highly disconcerting, but also quite threatening to our system.
Thank you very much. I know this must be a very difficult day for you.
It is. It has been I have dealt with a lot of tragic issues, but I've never felt as physically affected as I have with this.
Thank you very much. It's Jim Burnett, former National Transportation Safety Board Chairman, speaking with us from Arkansas. Richard Schultz has been kind enough to hang in there on the phone with us. He, of course, is Director of International Security Studies at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. And so we come up... Richard, toward the end of this hour, as you've been reflecting and listening to what our various guests had to say, is there anything new that has occurred to you? Obviously, a confirmation there of your suspicions by Jim Burnett of the NTSB that pilots would not have flown these aircraft into the buildings.
You know, one thing that is going through my mind will be the question that everyone will ask, and that is... how could it happen? And what that's going to do is that's going to peel an onion. And we're going to start to have a good look at what our counterterrorism policy has and has not been. And I think that when we have a look at that, what we're going to find is that there has been much less attention to what inside the system are sometimes called proactive measures to deal with terrorism. Rather, we've treated it mainly as a law enforcement problem and one that we react to.
So but an event happens and we pursue those responsible.
That's right. And because of the extent of this operation and the ramifications of it, there will be some serious rethinking of why that has occurred and why, for example, we aren't more assertive in what we do.
Well, so, proactive measures, as well you know, sir, are involved generally bombing somebody else's territory.
Well, it also involves the use of special capabilities that we've invested a lot of money in. For example, we have a whole special operations capability whose mission it is, in part, to be able to deal with threats proactively without having to do what you just said, and that is bomb indiscriminately people's territory. And those capabilities frequently have not been used, and there's going to be a question as to why.
For fear of international repercussions, but specifically why, I'm sure there will be many questions. Also about airport security, how planes at three different airports were able to be hijacked.
See, all of this, as I think about it, we have crossed a tremendous threshold. And just think about the questions that are going to be asked about domestic security. Now, you know, very sensitive subject as well, because, of course, that cuts right into the area of our own rights. All of this will be on the table because of this event.
We have become accustomed to what we have come to regard as somewhat intrusive and annoying security at airports already. As you suggest, it's likely to be nothing like that for the rest of our lives.
I think that's true. And so that's what I mean by the ramifications of this will touch all aspects of policy and security. And that's why I say we have crossed a tremendous threshold today.
Richard Schultz, thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Richard Schultz is Director of International Security Studies at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University in Medford, Massachusetts. Also, earlier this hour, we spoke with Senator John Warner of the state of Virginia, Republican, and Congressman Jim Moran of Virginia, a Democrat. NPR's Melissa Block was with us from New York. Tom Jelton joined us from nearby the Pentagon outside of Washington, D.C. We spoke with Jim Zaroli in New York City, and also we spoke with Craig Childs, a commentator on NPR's Morning Edition, A Witness Today. I'm Neil Conan. This is a special report from NPR News.
Support for National Public Radio comes from this and other National Public Radio stations. Contributors also include the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Annie E. Casey Foundation, supporting families and neighborhoods by funding initiatives aimed at helping disadvantaged children, on the web at aecf.org, and the Wallace Reader's Digest Funds, saluting cultural programming on NPR, recipient of the Year 2000 National Medal of Arts. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
NPR News will provide special coverage throughout the day and night to keep you informed on today's events, events President Bush has called an apparent terrorist attack. We'll continue here in Studio 3A until 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Then Noah Adams, Linda Wertheimer, and Robert Siegel will continue news coverage of today's events. NPR News will be here to provide special news coverage throughout the day and night. This is NPR News.